Today is Thursday, September 11th, and this is the World Socialist Website. European powers escalate war threats against Russia after drones shot down over Poland, by Peter Schwartz. On Wednesday, Polish and Dutch fighter jets shot down a group of drones allegedly flying over Polish territory in the first known instance of a NATO member directly firing on Russian military assets. Prime Minister Donald Tusk told the Polish parliament yesterday, quote, "This situation brings us closer to open conflict than we have been since World War II, unquote. His government has requested consultations under Article 4 of the NATO Treaty. Article 4 obliges NATO members to discuss joint defense measures if a member state feels its security is threatened. It has only been invoked 7 times in the 76-year history of the military alliance. It is the precursor to Article 5, which obliges NATO countries to provide mutual assistance in the event of war. If Tusk and his NATO colleagues are convinced that an open conflict with Russia, the world's second-largest nuclear-armed power, is imminent, why are they not pulling out all the political and diplomatic stops to prevent such a catastrophe? Even during the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, when the world was closer than ever before and since to a nuclear showdown, U.S. President John F. Kennedy took enormous risks, but he ultimately prevailed over the hawks in his own military and achieved a diplomatic solution. Today, there is not a single voice of moderation among NATO's leading representatives. No sooner had it been reported that Polish and Dutch fighter jets and German Patriot missiles, with the support of Italian AWACS surveillance aircraft, had shot down drones in Polish airspace, then they began to outdo each other in war rhetoric. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte accused Russia of violating Polish airspace, saying, quote, "Whether it was intentional or not, it is absolutely reckless. It is absolutely dangerous." European Union Foreign Affairs Representative and former Estonian Prime Minister Kaja Kallas claimed that everything pointed to, quote, "the most serious violation of European airspace by Russia since the start of the war, being intentional and not accidental." EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen condemned Russia in a speech to the European Parliament for the, quote, "reckless and unprecedented violation of Polish airspace," unquote. She pledged 6 billion euro to Ukraine from the interest on frozen Russian assets for the production of its own drones. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer condemned, quote, "the egregious and unprecedented violation of Polish and NATO airspace by Russian drones as, quote unquote, deeply concerning and an, quote, extremely reckless move." He assured Tusk of Britain's support. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius claimed in the Bundestag that over 19 drones had, quote, "obviously been sent on their way from Belarusian territory," unquote. There was, quote, "definitely no reason to suspect that these were course correction errors," unquote. The drones had, quote, "obviously been deliberately set on this course," unquote. He accused the Russian armed forces of constant threats and provocations and promised to send a message at the NATO consultations. The circumstances surrounding the incident remain completely unclear. Neither the number nor the origin of the drones is known. While Tusk spoke of 19 drones entering Polish airspace, only 3 or 4 were reported to have been shot down. Even Polish President Karol Nawrocki, a right-wing hardliner, had to admit that he did not expect to have complete information about the events for another 48 hours. The Russian Defense Ministry denied any intention to hit targets in Poland and said it was ready to consult with the Polish Defense Ministry on the matter. In the past, drones from the war in Ukraine have strayed into Poland without NATO accusing Russia of any intent. Pavel Morawiecki, deputy defense minister of Belarus, which borders Poland, said drones had accidentally entered Polish airspace because their navigation system had been disrupted. Belarus itself shot down drones over its territory because they had lost their bearings. Disrupting GPS signals is a widespread weapon in the war in Ukraine. But even if everything NATO claims are true, a few drones do not pose a serious military threat to the military alliance. Rather, the circumstances suggest that the European NATO powers prepared and partially staged the action to justify further military measures against Russia and demonstrate their ability to carry them out on their own. Since U.S. President Trump met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Alaska, the European powers have been waiting for such an opportunity. They concluded from the Alaska summit that the U.S. can no longer be relied upon and are taking increasingly aggressive action against Russia. They have massively increased their financial and military support for Ukraine, are encouraging President Zelensky to attack targets deep inside Russia, and are planning to send their own troops to Ukraine. In doing so, they are moving ever closer to a catastrophe that threatens the survival of humanity. This madness follows an international pattern. Political crises and violence are escalating everywhere. Democracy, social security, human rights, and international law are being trampled underfoot. In the U.S., President Trump has just moved to rename the Department of Defense the Department of War. And for once, he was not lying. In order to make America great again, that is, to defend the profits of the American oligarchs, he is covering the whole world with punitive tariffs and threats of war. Domestically, he is establishing an authoritarian dictatorship. The ICE Gestapo hunts down migrants, and the National Guard and military are sent to large cities to suppress social unrest, that is, strikes, protests, and any form of social and political resistance. The Zionist regime of Israel flouts all legal and moral norms, destroys the Gaza Strip with its 2 million inhabitants, attacks Qatar with impunity, and is supported in this by the U.S. and the EU. Anyone who protests against this is persecuted and arrested as an alleged anti-Semite. Europe is following the same path as the U.S. The reallocation of hundreds of billions to rearmament and war, the repayment of exploding debts and the wealth of a few are incompatible with social equality and democracy. With the same ruthlessness with which the European powers are escalating the war against Russia, they are cracking down on their own working class. War and class war are two sides of the same coin. In the founding program of the Fourth International, Leon Trotsky wrote in 1938, on the eve of World War II, quoting, "Under the increasing tension of capitalist disintegration, imperialist antagonisms reach an impasse at the height of which separate clashes and bloody local disturbances in Ethiopia, Spain, the Far East, Central Europe, must inevitably coalesce into a conflagration of world dimensions. The bourgeoisie, of course, is aware of the mortal danger to its domination represented by a new war. But that class is now immeasurably less capable of averting war than on the eve of 1914, end quote. The crisis of capitalism and imperialist antagonisms have once again reached the same limit today. This is the reason for the escalation of the war against Russia. There is no support for this among the broad masses of the population, and resistance is growing among the working class against layoffs, wage cuts, social spending cuts, and dictatorship. This explosive opposition must free itself from the influence of the trade unions in all parties, right-wing and supposedly left-wing, that defend capitalism. Only an independent movement of the international working class, fighting for the overthrow of capitalism and the establishment of a socialist society, can halt the descent into war, dictatorship, and poverty. The socialist equality parties and the International Committee of the Fourth International fight for this perspective. Gunman Kills Fascist Trump Activist Charlie Kirk by Patrick Martin. Fascist pro-Trump political operative Charlie Kirk, 31, was shot to death Wednesday afternoon on the campus of Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah, as he was addressing a crowd at an open-air event. Kirk was the founder and leader of Turning Point USA, a fascist youth group that has been active on college campuses promoting white supremacy and hatred of immigrants and leftists. After playing a major role in Trump's 2024 election campaign, including a prime speaking slot at the Republican National Convention, Kirk became a powerful advisor to the new administration, vetting cabinet nominees for their acceptability to Trump's fascist base. Police and Utah state authorities have so far released little information about the circumstances of the shooting, and nothing at all about the motivation of the shooter. While FBI Director Kash Patel claimed that the gunman was in custody, local and state officials said only that they had a person of interest who was being interviewed, and that the investigation was ongoing. Patel later reversed himself, noting that the person of interest had been questioned and released. The event at Utah Valley University was the first of a series of more than a dozen public meetings at campuses across the country, at which Kirk was to defend the actions of the Trump administration, particularly the persecution of immigrants and the genocide in Gaza. The tour was to include a debate with Hassan Piker at Dartmouth College on September 25th. Trump made the first public announcement of Kirk's death, posting on social media, quote, "The great and even legendary Charlie Kirk is dead," he wrote, adding, quote, "He was loved and admired by all, especially me, and now he is no longer with us," unquote. In a fascistic statement delivered from the White House Wednesday night, Trump denounced the, quote, "radical left," unquote, which he said was, quote, "directly responsible for the terrorism that we're seeing in our country, and it must stop right now," unquote. Trump clearly went on national television to exploit the shooting and turn Kirk into a martyr to legitimize escalating violence from the far right and threaten his political opponents. This is under conditions in which no arrest has been made, and there is no actual information on the killer. Trump ordered flags flown at half-staff through Sunday throughout the United States, and an extraordinary display of mourning for someone who had no record of public service, but rather had devoted himself to the most repulsive forms of hate-mongering and racism. Kirk is certainly the first full-blown fascist to receive such an honor. Most of the official statements of sorrow and regret cited Kirk's comparative youth and the fact that he leaves two young children. No such considerations were voiced for victims of disappearance and detention at the hands of Immigration and Customs Enforcement thugs such as Kilmar Obrego Garcia, who has three children with his American citizen wife, one of them autistic, and Mahmoud Khalil, who was denied compassionate release to be with his wife for the birth of their first child. The Utah Republican Party characterized the shooting as politically motivated left-wing violence, even without a shred of evidence yet available. Its statement declared, quote, "The attack on Charlie Kirk and free speech is evil, pure and simple. The hate, violence, and evil being peddled by radical extremists has no place in this country. Schools and social media have become breeding grounds for liberal hate. Enough," unquote. A flood of ultra-right and fascist commentators seized on the Kirk killing to claim that liberals and radicals were engaging in a violent onslaught against the Trump administration and American society as a whole. Billionaire Elon Musk tweeted, quote, "The left is the party of murder," unquote. In reality, there has been a surge of right-wing violence in recent years, most notably the fascist attack of January 6, 2021, when Trump sought to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Numerous fascist gunmen have carried out politically and racially motivated mass killings. The shooting of Kirk follows the murder of a Democratic state legislative leader and her husband in Minnesota, and the arson attack on the home of the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania. And it comes amid a continual stream of threats of violence, imprisonment, and deportation by President Trump against targets ranging from his opponents and the Washington political establishment to the millions of immigrant workers who have come to the U.S. to escape persecution or find work. The response of the Democratic Party has been cowardice and complicity in this right-wing narrative. Leading Democrats, including former Presidents Barack Obama and Joe Biden, former Vice President Kamala Harris, and Senator Bernie Sanders, all issued groveling statements. Sanders wrote on X that, quote, political violence has no place in this country, and, quote, my thoughts are with Charlie Kirk and his family. California Governor Gavin Newsom called the killing of Kirk, quote, disgusting, vile, and reprehensible, unquote. Newsom interviewed Kirk as a guest on his own podcast earlier this year, as part of an attempt to find common ground with the far right that also included a warm welcome to Steve Bannon. The most groveling response to the killing of Kirk and the fascist effort to profit from it politically came from the New York Times, the semi-official voice of the Democratic Party. Within hours of the assassination, an editorial appeared on the newspaper's website headlined, America Mourns Charlie Kirk. The title was subsequently changed to, Charlie Kirk's Horrific Killing and America's Worsening Political Violence. It is politically appropriate to condemn the killing, which accomplishes nothing progressive and actually aids the effort of the Trump White House to attack democratic rights and erect a police state. But that is no reason to glorify the victim or cover up the bloodthirsty, bigoted character of his political perspective. The Times editors claim, quote, such violence is antithetical to America, unquote. On the contrary, such violence is the stock in trade of the American ruling class, whether directed at striking workers, racial minorities, immigrants, or political figures deemed to be dangerous or merely inconvenient. It is barely a week since the President of the United States ordered the incineration of 11 people in a Venezuelan fishing boat, claiming without offering any evidence that they were drug smugglers and terrorists. The glorification of Kirk by both capitalist parties and the corporate media in the wake of his killing requires covering up a sordid political record of unmatched foulness. Over the past decade, Charlie Kirk has seized every opportunity to promote racism, bigotry, and fascism, building Turning Point USA with funding from billionaire Richard Uihlein. He was a key organizer of the January 6, 2021 Stop the Steal rally that culminated in the assault on the U.S. Capitol. Kirk has been one of the loudest advocates of the neo-Nazi Great Replacement Theory, which claims that Jewish billionaires are conspiring to replace the white population through immigration. At a 2023 Turning Point rally in Arizona, he ranted that Minneapolis was destroyed by immigrants, describing the city as a, quote, perfect example of the Great Replacement. This year alone, Turning Point USA's ties to violence and reactionary politics have been clear. In April, a member of the organization opened fire at Florida State University, killing two and wounding five. Shortly afterward, Kirk exploited the deaths from flooding in Texas to whip up racial hatred, using his podcast to blame an African-American official for the tragedy. At least one worker kidnapped at Hyundai plant and facing deportation, despite possessing legal visa. By Patrick Smith and Jacob Cross. Nearly a week after almost 500 workers were kidnapped by the federal immigration agents at the joint Hyundai-LG factory and battery plant in Georgia, The Guardian reported that at least one of the workers was legally living and working in the United States. Citing an internal federal document, The Guardian reported Wednesday that one of the workers was legally in the U.S. yet was still forced to sign documentation agreeing to a voluntary departure. So far, The Guardian has only obtained documentation proving at least one worker was legally in the country, but there is every reason to believe many of the 475 workers kidnapped on September 4th were not criminals in any sense of the word and had done everything in their power to comply with U.S. immigration law. As of this writing, over 300 Korean workers remain in the United States. A chartered flight orchestrated between the governments of South Korea and the United States to send the workers back to Seoul was canceled on Wednesday. Another 175 workers from several other countries are still detained in an ICE concentration camp. The documentation obtained by The Guardian refutes the initial statement advanced by the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, which claimed that all those kidnapped were in the country illegally. In its September 4th press release, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, wrote that, quote, individuals arrested during the operation were found to be working illegally in violation of the terms of their visas and or status, unquote. Yet the document, written by an ICE agent, according to The Guardian, confirms that at least one worker, quote, entered into the United States with a valid B1, B2 visa and was employed at HLGA Battery Company LLC as a contractor from the South Korean company SFA. From statements made and queries in law enforcement databases, this person has not violated his visa, unquote. Even though the worker was legally allowed to labor and live in the United States, the document continues, quote, however, the Atlanta field office director has mandated the person be presented as a voluntary departure. The person has accepted voluntary departure despite not violating his B1, B2 visa requirements. In other words, despite this worker having their papers in order, he has been kidnapped, held in ICE custody for the last week, and will be forced to leave the country. Charles Cuck, an Atlanta immigration attorney who represents some of the detained South Korean workers, said in an interview with the Associated Press Monday that many of the workers were engaged in authorized activities under the B1 business visitor visa program. He said that their intended stay in the United States was limited to a few weeks and, quote, never more than 75 days. Cuck explained that no U.S. company manufactures the machines used at the Georgia battery plant, so the machines and specially trained workers had to be brought in from overseas for installation and on-site repairs. He noted that training someone in the U.S. to carry out this type of work would take approximately 3 to 5 years. He continued, quote, this is not a new practice. We have done this for a long time, and it continues. When we export products, we send our own personnel abroad to manage them, unquote. Speaking to The Guardian on Wednesday on the ICE document, Cuck said the file describes an actual crime committed by the government. He called the arrest, quote, illegal and outrageous. Cuck said, quote, this is a clear violation of the law in detaining someone who was not lawfully detainable. That's a crime. That's unlawful imprisonment in the United States. This isn't an accident. People go to prison for stuff like this, he told the paper. In a statement to The Guardian, a DHS spokesperson defended the arrest of the worker with a blatant lie. Quote, this individual admitted to unauthorized work on a B1, B2 visa. He was offered voluntary departure and accepted it, unquote. DHS thugs are repeating the same lies as the fascists in the White House. Over the weekend, Trump stated categorically that the workers kidnapped, quote, were in the U.S. illegally, unquote. In a gangster threat to non-U.S. controlled corporations, Trump added that if they want access to the U.S. market, they must both comply with his immigration regime and agree to train and hire, quote-unquote, American workers on his terms. Trump's threats in the raid in Georgia are not aimed at empowering American workers or enforcing immigration law, but are an assault on the rights of every worker and an attempt by the aspiring dictator to set labor and hiring practices across the board. Corporations that hire immigrants or un-American workers run the risk of militarized raids, detention, and deportation. The mass arrest of workers last week has caused outrage in the U.S. and internationally. On Saturday, protesters gathered outside the plant in Ellabelle, Georgia, to denounce the attacks on immigrants in the mass deportation operation. The brutal treatment of the workers, forced to march onto buses shackled in chains, has also provoked outrage in South Korea. On Tuesday, protesters gathered outside the U.S. Embassy in Seoul, South Korea, carrying signs that read, "A tariff bomb and workers' confinement." Notably, while workers in the U.S. and internationally are disgusted and angered at the ongoing mass deportation operation, much of the trade union bureaucracy is openly aligning itself with the immigration Gestapo. In an interview with the Associated Press, Christy Holm, president of the AFL-CIO Savannah Regional Central Labor Council, alleged that the detained South Korean workers were taking jobs, quote-unquote, reserved for certain affiliated unions. Holm declared, quote, "basically our labor was being given to illegal immigrants," unquote. This statement expresses not the interests of the working class, but the reactionary nationalism of the union bureaucracy. For decades, the AFL-CIO has collaborated with the corporations in the state in suppressing strikes, enforcing concessions, and pitting workers against one another along racial and national lines. In echoing the propaganda of the Trump administration, the unions make clear that they stand not with workers facing persecution, but with the state apparatus of raids, deportations, and mass incarceration. Far from defending our jobs, the bureaucracy seeks to protect its own privileged position as labor police, enforcing the demands of the capitalist class while dividing American workers from their brothers and sisters internationally. The path forward lies not in the AFL-CIO and their adjuncts. As Will Lehman, socialist auto worker, wrote earlier this week, quoting, "Workers cannot rely on the union bureaucracy, the Democratic Party, or any section of the ruling class to defend our rights. The defense of immigrant workers must be taken into our own hands. I call for the formation of rank-and-file defense committees in every workplace and neighborhood, composed of workers themselves and independent of the union apparatus. These committees must demand the immediate release of the workers arrested at Hyundai and an end to the campaign of terror against immigrant workers, organize mass demonstrations, prepare solidarity strike actions, and link up with workers across industries and borders." This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.